There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech Magic. I am your host, Kathy Hackle, and this is a podcast where we talk about everything happening in technology, from gaming, spatial computing, to AI-driven hardware, and the latest in innovations. And I'm joined, as always, by my guest co-host, Lee Keebler. Lee, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you? Welcome back.
Welcome back to the dry land. I'm doing great. I spent about 4 days on a cruise called Summit at Sea. It's like put together by Summit Events. A lot of people know the Summit Events, but Summit at Sea is like really special. You're on this cruise with like all these really like amazing people, all these visionaries. Like I don't know. I'm coming off of the Summit at Sea high of like spending like so much time trapped on a ship with amazing people. Yeah. Like just the conversations. I don't know. Anyone that like has been thinking of doing a Summit event, try to go because they are amazing. Like everyone's super open and friendly. Great business meetings, great connections, amazing parties too. So just an amazing experience overall. The content, the speakers, I mean, fantastic. I learned a lot. I did a talk on spatial computing and AI wearables, talked a lot about, you know, vision enabled wearables and kind of where all this, like the Cambrian explosion that we're going to see on hardware coming pretty soon. And all that. We even did a live demo of the Apple Vision Pro on stage during my keynote, which went really well. But you know, with live demos, Lee, like anything can happen. So I normally do not get nervous. Like at this point, I love speaking. I know my talks. But because we had to do a live demo, it was the first time doing something like that on stage with the Vision Pro.
On a cruise ship, by
on
the way.
On a cruise ship, mind you. Yeah. On a cruise ship. So many things could have gone wrong. And, you know, so I was there a couple hours earlier getting everything, you know, making sure everything worked. So when I put the device on for a second, it wasn't going to work. But then, I don't know, the magical, you know, Summit at Sea elves, did their magic. And we were able to do it. And like people were really impressed. And I don't know. It was such a thrilling experience.
Any major takeaways? Something
major like, takeaways. Yeah. I'll tell you major takeaways. Definitely a conversation around AI. But I think it was a measured conversation around like the good and the bad. It wasn't only like, oh, it's all perfect. So that was really positive.
That seems to be happening more right now.
Right? Yeah.
And that's such a good thing.
I think it's a little bit of a shift. So that my favorite, there were two of my favorite talks were one with Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe, about in like performance and, you know, they're these amazing athletes, they're kind of thinking through performance and how you do your best. Right. But also like their challenges. They talked about women's sports, which is something you and I have talked about on the podcast. Yeah. So it was really interesting to listen to them. And then my other favorite talk was Ben Lamb, my friend Ben Lamb, who I know from like the tech industry, who has a company called Colossal, they're working on bringing back the woolly mammoth. Just that, you know, simple.
sure why not?
What could go wrong? No. His talk was fantastic, but I actually got to spend time with him, have coffee, and and we talked a lot about not only de-extinction, like bringing things back from being extinct, but also like saving animals from extinction, right, and rewilding creatures. So they're doing interesting projects with the white rhinos.
Interesting.
Yeah. So like totally not our space. Like, you know, that's not our side of the
industry. No, but it's still interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's something that impacts everybody. And I don't, the fact that those conversations are happening in the background, I don't think many people even take the time to think like how far we've come with that and where, you know, I grew up in the age of where everyone talked about Dolly, the sheep, the first cloned sheep. And then like that was in the news. And then all of a sudden just vanished and people stopped talking about it. But it's interesting that there's this continually growing conversation about animals that are going extinct and the ability to bring them back. And it would be interesting to see a woolly mammoth in my lifetime. That would be kind of cool. Yeah. I'm down.
Fascinating. I mean, yeah. we should definitely have Ben on the podcast. I think he'd be a great guest. And I think our audience would be like, tell me more. Like, it sounds really interesting.
I think it might be a little cruel in the sense of like, we bring a woolly mammoth back right at, as we enter like global warming. And that thing's like, y'all, it's so hot. Like,
yeah, come changed.
On. I need a haircut.
Yeah, my genetics were not prepared for this.
There was a reason I left.
So yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. But he even said, I can't remember. I think he said by 2028. That's crazy. Wow. Like, that's amazing.
That's not that far off. That's
it's around the corner.
That's an election cycle. Like, that is crazy.
So key takeaways, just the amount of content, conversations, everyone was super friendly. Like, I don't know. We wine and dine and party with amazing people. So,
and it's kind of like a summer camp. You meet people and you're going to be friends forever and you have a new pen pal.
Well, yeah. You know, so the what they say is like summit events are like TED plus Burning Man plus Soho House kind of together. And it did feel like that, like the full vibe. Like,
I would even add
like TED, Burning Man, Soho House, and Davos. Like, that's just like a mix of all of that put together, if that makes sense. So fantastic. Just anyway. So I'm coming off of that, you know, summit at Sea High and getting my Apple Vision Pro live demo done. So excited.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great.
But lots of stuff happening. I mean, Apple has announced the date for their Worldwide Developers Conference in June. That's going to be really exciting, I am sure. I mean, I'm seeing some people that are getting invited. Hopefully I'll get invited. We'll see. But I have a feeling there's obviously going to be tons of AI announcements that they're going to make. And obviously they're going to have to tie it into their hardware.
They've made a couple of interesting announcements on their hardware. And a couple of a de-announcement where they've kind of like said, we're not going to keep focusing on this automotive, which that was always a weird thing. So for those who don't know, like at one point years ago, Apple kind of shadow dropped this like news that they were kind of looking at the automotive industry. And I do think some interesting things came out of that, specifically like CarPlay and that OS that has now arrived in a lot of new vehicles where you just plug your iPhone in and then it just takes over and you have access to the apps that are available right there in your vehicle. I honestly love that. It's still a little clunky. You can tell it's like the most neglected operating system that they've worked on, but it's still really nice to have a lot of those features kind of just baked into the vehicle. You just plug it in and boom, your phone takes over and you can access those things. So that's cool. But there was this like hint that they were going to go kind of maybe towards the Tesla approach of making vehicles. They didn't ever say that much. They hired a bunch of people. And then we really didn't get much of an update after that until this week.
In traditional Apple mode, though. Like, that's what they did with the Vision Pro. Like, we knew all these people that work there, but like, what are they working on? Of course.
Yeah. It is just strange. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it is strange.
It is strange. Like, if it hadn't been for Tesla, right, I would have said this is not true. But Tesla kind of just like establishing itself as a tech focused car company, which I think was the motivator behind them doing this, made it a possibility, made it like a realistic opportunity that we weren't really sure what was going to happen. And then for it to just kind of be announced, JK, we're not doing it. I would love to know what was happening in that background. And because it's been years since they made that announcement.
Well, and I think the news was that they're moving away from the car project.
Yeah.
Right. Moving people away from the car project, putting them on AI work. And then the latest news that they're actually working and looking more at home robots. Right.
And that was the big part of it, was like the home technology. And as a large tech company goes, that has had such massive lifestyle success, right? With the Apple Watch all the way down to the iPhone, and how integral that has become into everyone's life. It seems a bit serendipitous, or kind of like really good timing right now to go into this more home-driven technology approach to development. We don't know There's been a lot of like home gadgets that we have seen in the tech space kind of crop up over the years. And you can walk into like any Best Buy and see a number of different like home tech gadgets. And They're always made by some random third party. Well, Amazon and Google did get really deep into this, right?
Yeah.
So it is kind of proven as a space that, it is kind of surprising that Apple hasn't gotten involved, you know, like security systems all the way to like home cameras to everything else that, you know, Google, like Google TV having, you know, well, I mean, I guess Apple does have that, but seeing more of those things integrated into the home where everything kind of exists in the Apple ecosystem, which is the thing they do the best.
Yeah.
It makes sense that in 2024, we might see more home focused Apple developments.
That would make sense, especially like I'm thinking from not from like the entrepreneurial business perspective, from like a mom perspective. Mm-hmm. Like my home is iOS. Like the kids are on iOS devices. I'm on iOS. Like we have an Alexa and everything. Sorry if I woke her up for anyone, but but like we use it for certain things. But if we don't want to use Siri. Like I hope she's not good. You know, at home she's not a good thing. But Alexa's better in that sense. But if there's like a robot or something, like if there's some other things that we can add, incorporate into that. I mean, there's already like Siri stuff, but.
I have a random smattering of like Amazon stuff in my home, right? Yeah. Like my camera system is by Blink. Blink mm-hmm. makes a great home security camera system. And I've been super impressed with them, right? Netgear had kind of like set that path when they released Arlo, and then other companies got on board. And it is kind of strange that like a company that is known, Apple, a company that is known for their camera development, like they are by and large a camera company as much as they're a computing company. It is strange that they don't have like those type of things focused for the home. I'm not saying that's what they're doing. I obviously don't know, but it does seem kind of like there is this tech sector that Apple is just non-existent in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think we'll definitely see more announcements from them. Lots of AI announcements in June. I'm sure they're going to try to incorporate all the AI into hardware. So aligned with that, I think it was really interesting just starting to see a lot more coverage on the Cambrian explosion of new AI hardware that's coming. There was news about Jony Ive and Sam Altman talking to Emerson Collective and other VCs about raising funds for this new hardware idea that they have. I think they're trying to raise, what I read in the information, I think it was $1 billion for just a concept. Like there's like nothing yet necessarily, which is interesting. You know, having worked at hardware companies like Vive and Magic Leap, I'm really interested. I think we have a kind of a golden age coming of new devices. Because everyone's going to want to own what I call the container where we engage with AI, right? AI is getting infused into everything. And whoever owns that container can own the data. And here's the reasoning here, Lee, because, you know, AI, generative AI is pretty soon going to run out of data from the internet. Like it's going to read everything. It's going to do everything, right?
Yeah.
What is it going to train on? To me, it's going to train on real world data, right? Things through computer vision. It's going to need that constant influx of data in order for it, like robots to like navigate the world around us and everything. They need to be able to scan the physical world constantly, and they're going to train these models, right? So my whole talk that I did at Summit at Sea was focused on spatial computing, unlocking this new human-computer interaction, and like this the vision-enabled AI devices that are coming, this is a gold rush towards owning those containers. So what are your thoughts? Because I know you probably have a lot of thoughts.
Well, I'm stuck a little bit. I don't think I'm as bullish on that happening. Not as fast as I think you're suggesting.
Okay.
And my reasoning is because, like, last week I just finally gave up on ChatGPT and just disconnected and was just like, it's not worth $20 a month. Now, that let me be really clear about that. It is because it has gotten worse. Mm-hmm. If I had access to the version of ChatGPT-4 that existed 4 months ago, I would happily still keep paying $20 a month. Like, that's fine. It did amazing things. But now, and this goes back to our previous conversations of, like, changing in regulation, having to update terms of service, this big threat of a splinter net that keeps rolling out. These are massive roadblocks and hurdles that some may not be able to be overcome, at least not within years, right? So I don't know. It gets a little hairy when there is the rate in which AI unfettered AI could advance, and that could actually be terrifying. And now there is this rate in which it is being restricted, and therefore its rate of advance is an unknown. We don't know. So I don't know. I do think that it should be able to continue to learn even off of its own generation. You know, and I think this is where a lot of, like, scientific study comes into play with having a lot of value in AI, of, like, it can just take what it discovers and build upon that. And there's a lot to be said for that value. But every company is, you know, bringing in some form of AI. And what I've noticed is it all sounds the same when you're interacting with a company and they all have some, like, enterprise ChatGPT account. All of a sudden they're not fine tuning it. And I think this creates an opportunity for new employment. It's a new job that, you know, people don't know that they're going to need, but the people who can, like, curate and tune the company's AI to stay focused and have a specific voice, because it's just not doing that right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, it's kind of what corporate comms already does.
Yeah. But
with external, you know, external facing and with people, but I guess it's, like, it's going to be another mode of,
but there has to be someone who can sit in between, like, corporate communications and translate that to train an AI. For that, you know, that stopgap. So I don't know. It's a Wild West moment, but there's a lot of sheriffs coming into town, right? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's Wild
Lots
West, but
sheriffs,
there's a lot of sheriffs that are stepping up.
A lot of sheriffs in town.
And they're all going for the badge. So we'll see. I don't know. I think it might take a little bit longer.
I do want us to share in the show notes this article from The Verge that came out. I shared it on LinkedIn. It's lots of people have it reshared it and shared some of my perspective on it. But it's called Welcome to the AI Gadget Era, which is, you know, something that I'm speaking about, like, the next phase of AI.
Yeah.
Which is, like, the hardware and these containers, what I call containers, right? But it says Humane, Rabbit, Brilliant, Meta, and countless other companies are just about to launch AI first gadgets or have launched. AI hardware may not be as big as the smartphone, but it's going to be big. And I agree with that. I don't think that every, like, one of these devices is going to be big. But I think as a category, it's going to get really interesting really fast, especially if Johnny Ive and Sam Altman raise that capital, because that sends a giant signal. And I mean, you all already have Costla Ventures talking about their investment in Rabbit. So, and Humane, by the way, their CEO was on the boat, on the ship as well, doing a talk on Humane in the future.
So. I agree with you. I totally agree. And we can actually come up with just sitting here, I can come up with a couple of different, like, AI based products, projects that would make a lot of sense from a commercial standpoint. I think the issue that a lot of people have with AI products, like tangible physical things, is they want to build a thing that does everything, right? And that scope is so unnecessarily unobtainable. Yeah. Whereas, like, let's use this show for example. Kathy has a dog. That dog tends to bark when we do a podcast. If you listen clearly, You'll hear it.
You'll hear him.
The microphone she uses is connected via USB to her computer. That company, I believe that's Shure.
It is
Shure. If you're listening.
Thank you, Shure.
If they were able to build a microphone that had an AI that could recognize her voice print and would take everything else out other than her voice as it comes in, that has value. It's a very small functional AI that only has one targeted use. That will sell a product.
Yeah.
As we try to take these huge, massive, I want to build a thing that does all the things. We're not there. Always going to fall short. And you know, I come from that music background. I come from that music tech background, and I see stuff get released all the time. Akai, which is a company that's been around forever, released a plugin called Stems, and it takes music. Like Akai is, they make drum machines and music samplers where a lot of hip hop music comes out of, right? And they have this new plugin that takes a sample and it's amazing. You can separate the vocals from the drums, from the bass, from the other instruments. And now you have these from a pre-mixed sample. As a musician, that's never been, like, that's a pipe dream. That shouldn't be real. But we live in, and it's a $10 like app, so right?
Crazy,
and it's running through an AI pipeline that knows how to do all of this. Those are the things that I think we're going to see more of. That's just my hope.
It is a gold rush in that sense. Like, I do agree, like, a lot of these things are not going to be able to do everything and be everything to everyone.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly agree with you. We'll have to see what, you know, how people use them. What is the true value in them? Many of them will fail. Like, just hardware is hard.
Hardware is hard.
Yeah. Like, that is the honest to God truth. It's expensive. It's hard to do, et cetera. We'll have to see what happens. But I do think there is this, at least in Silicon Valley, right? This mad race to replace the mobile phone or to be what comes next. And generative AI, like this moment that we're in, kind of has fueled the fire for that next phase of, like, potentially what replaces it or what comes next, or, you know, what hardware are we going to use in the future?
And I wonder if that's a short-sighted, like, a short-sighted approach from Silicon Valley, right? They're looking at it as a mobile phone. I think that might be the mistake, right? Like, the phone, quote unquote phone, that is in everyone's pocket is a computer that happens to have a phone app, right? That takes a SIM card and connects to a cellular tower and all of that. But at the end of the day, what we have in our pocket today is not where it started, and it's not the same device. And I think we can definitely do some things to make it a little bit more approachable, right? But by and large, and this goes back to, like, some of the devices that I'm super excited for, like the R1 Rabbit, right? Teenage Engineering put that out with the R1 company. And it's neat, but and as cool as it is, I don't understand what it can do that is better than just having an AI app on my quote unquote phone. So those are going to be those hurdles that
I think there's that level of novelty, right? There's that novelty of, like, shiny new gadget and what can it do? Like, so I do think a lot, many of them are going to fail. Right. But I do think that there is this moment, right, where everyone's thinking of, like, what replaces the mobile phone, or, you know, what comes next?
Totally.
What mobile phones came after computers, like after, you know, desktop computers. So what comes after the mobile phone? That being said, and I've changed my perspective quite a bit. I used to talk a lot about the post-smartphone future. I still think we're going to have smartphones for a very long time. Like, I think I've changed my mentality. I do think that there are going to be just a lot of other devices. And eventually people are going to choose, you know, whether they want to use this one or that one. At the end of the day, whatever device wins, if there is going to be a winner, I think there's going to be many different versions, is going to have communication, compute, and convenience all in one. It has to all be together in one.
Yeah.
All right, Lee. So what other news are you keeping your eyes on right now?
Well, okay. So for me, and this is a big one, and we've kind of touched on this in the past, but both of us have to do a little bit more due diligence before we give too much, you know, insight in this. But I've always been a big proponent for net neutrality, and a lot of that got stripped away during the Trump administration. The FCC has now brought a vote to restore the net neutrality rules that are reversing what happened during the Trump administration. So there will be more on that to come, but it is absolutely something worth mentioning, especially since, you know, you and I have been talking a big part of like a lot of these things that are happening on a state level. They're good, but they need to happen on a federal level so that we don't end up with a bunch of like little state focused internet fiefdoms, for lack of a better word. I don't know what they are, but it's becoming trickier. And a lot of that comes down to bringing the FCC, getting things back to where there's some net neutrality across the board for the internet. And then we can start having a lot of these more important conversations of like where AI falls into this from a much more honed in like focus. There's a lot of things that are coming from the AI space when it comes to generative voice and making, you know, a bot that can function as another person who may or may not have given permission for that to happen. Like, there are issues where that's a good thing. James Earl Jones being Darth Vader for Disney said, "I don't want to make this voice anymore. So here's the everything you need legally to continue using my voice as Darth Vader." Fantastic. That is wonderful. It's a good use case. I am glad to hear that we aren't going to end up with like a squeaky voiced, you know, Darth Vader in the future, because James Earl Jones doesn't want to do it anymore. Now, on the other end, the George Carlin estate had to reach a settlement because there was an AI podcast that was basically building works off of George Carlin, the comedian long past. So like, you're looking at both sides of this, and we're all trying to grapple with the legal ramifications faster than the lawyers can actually come up with arguments, and way faster than judges can understand what's happening. It's kind of a weird moment on that.
It is a weird moment. I think we've discussed that here. Like, there has to be at a federal level, like you said, some type of guideline or rule or regulation or something that says this is what you do and this is how you do it, or this is what the law of the land is, right? So with that FCC rolling back, things that happened during the Trump era, I'm keeping my eye on that closely. My fear is, since, you know, elections, and we're not getting political here, I'm just saying, like, elections are coming up. Yep. No one knows what's going to happen. Like, you know, I don't know if, like, what if things get rolled back and then get rolled on? Like, it's just, you know, like, I want to remain hopeful about net neutrality, but then it's like, well, what happens? Like, is it just going to be one of these things where it just goes back and forth? And like, then you can't really truly exist.
Well, and it doesn't truly exist. Let's be honest.
Let's be clear.
And that's a big part of the FCC changing based on who's been inserted by whoever the president is. Mm-hmm. Right. And that was a big problem. Now I will say, and this is a frustration that I do have with the Biden administration, it's insane that it took this long. Mm-hmm. Like, this should have been an early, like, during the Trump administration, Ajit Pai got inserted into the FCC very quickly, like insanely early in that administration. That is what the administration decided that they wanted to do. Honestly, that's what should happen if that administration, any administration, has access to make those changes. It is a little frustrating that the current administration is now getting to it in its last year.
Yeah. In its last 6 months, almost like, almost.
Like that just seems a little like, okay, whatever. But at least it's happening. It's, for me, it's a step in the right direction. Hopefully some things can get established. I honestly
can't.
Yeah.
Can they, are they going to be able to do it in time? Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I hope so. I don't know what all the steps are. I'm obviously not a political pundit here, so I don't have a background in what it takes to make those policies happen or to make those insertions. It just seems like it might have been able to happen sooner. But, you know, late better than never, I guess. So I'm happy to see that happen.
Definitely something I think we should explore on many different levels as well. So I'm a member of the XR Association, the XRA, which is an organization based here in DC that represents the interest of XR companies. And, you know, I'm a member. We have next week, actually, a demo day on the Hill, on Capitol Hill, where we go and demo a lot of these technologies. We have a members event. Like, there's a very close relationship between the XRA and like certain lawmakers that are interested in XR and AI and everything that's happening. So, you know, obviously not necessarily touching on the net neutrality thing, but I think that hopefully, you know, as things progress, we'll be able to kind of have a better idea of what could be on the horizon from a, you know, from a government standpoint. So, you know, I'll report back for sure. Cause that I'm doing that event next week. It's, demo down Capitol Hill for XR technology. And then we have a whole event. And, you know, there's going to be lawmakers. There's going to be all kinds of conversations around XR, which is not obviously not net neutrality separate, but just wanted to mention that.
Well, and it's all kind of coming to head. Like, at least the government is starting to get involved in some of this stuff, and sometimes for better or for worse, right? So even I was reading a new report that the United States Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, mm-hmm. that's a mouthful.
A lot.
The CFPB is now looking at what regulation might look like for even things like Roblox.
Saw that, yeah.
Or Steam or all of these. Like, as you start building these platforms and these platforms bring in, hold, transfer, create their own currencies. And I've always wondered this about Roblox, right? Like, Roblox does kind of act like a bank.
Fortnite too, right?
Anywhere where you're creating, all the way down to Nintendo at one point, like, you don't, it doesn't work so much like this anymore, but it used to be you bought blocks of credit and then that credit could be utilized to buy video games for like when Nintendo was on like the Wii. You couldn't just pay for the exact amount of whatever that game cost. You had to buy like 10 Wii points or whatever it was. Even when the ruble in Russia was starting to tank, there was some immediate debt, like right when it was happening, people were making immediate valuations basing the ruble on what it costs for like a versus a Robux. And so it does function. You've talked about your son. My kids can do conversion.
Right. Like $1 equals X Robux. They don't know how much, you know, sterling, like, yeah.
Right. So as these things are happening, I think new regulations are coming into play. It'll be interesting to see what, you know, consumer protections are inevitable at the end of the day for a lot of this, because there's a lot of financial transactions happening and it does convert into currency fiat. And the government likes to know all of those things and would like to know what you're doing with its currency.
Yeah. So we'll definitely keep our eyes on that for sure. Okay. I do want us to go to break. And after break, we do have an expert interview. We've got Ori Imbar, our friend Ori Imbar, who is from Super Ventures and AWE, which is the world's largest augmented reality. I mean, it's an XR. Now it's an XR AI conference, but it's summer camp for us, for us geeks.
Yes.
We'll be there this year again in Long Beach. We've got Ori, an interview with Ori. So let's go on break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today on Tech Magic, I am joined by Ori Imbar, the co-founder of AWE, which means Augmented World Expo, and also Super Ventures. Ori, welcome to the pod.
Hey, Kathy. So great to be here.
Likewise. You and I have known each other for a long time. You've been part of the XR and tech industry for a while. I know a lot of folks already know you, but maybe some people that listen to the podcast might be new to you. So can you tell folks a little bit about who you are and what you have been doing?
Certainly. Yes. I've been playing with VR in the early 90s, like many of us. But then switched to enterprise software, you know, at a few startups. One was acquired by SAP, spent a few years there, and then entered the AR world in 2007, where I discovered this incredible technology that was pretty much hidden in labs, in a few labs around the world, and became the mission to find a way to bring it to everyone. So I founded Augmento, which built deep tech for AR as well as AR games. Not so dissimilar from Pokemon Go back in 2009 and 10. And that company later was acquired by Apple in 2015 and became the team became the foundation for the AR kit team and I guess now the vision team. But, you know, back then it felt so lonely in AR that joined forces with a few other entrepreneurs and we co-founded AWE as just a way to bring together the few people around the world that were working in this space and help advance it. And since then, you know, it grew along with the industry to become the largest conference with, you know, tens of thousands of people in this community around the world. And then in 2016, kind of a little bit after the Oculus acquisition, when a lot of investment started to come into XR, I felt it's the right time to start a fund dedicated to investing in early stage AR and VR startups. So we started Super Ventures together with some brilliant minds like Tom Emmerich, Matt Meisnicks, and Mark Billinghurst. And that was a lot of fun. Got a few cool exits like, you know, 6D to Niantic, yeah. Some to Snap, PTC, and others. So that was a lot of fun. And, you know, throughout the last 16, 17 years, I've been mentoring and advising literally thousands of AR and VR startups. Some, you know, in higher capacity, others just, you know, through accelerators or kind of online classes, things like that. But that's been kind of the past, I guess, almost 18 years now in this space. And it's just the beginning.
So it's been a crazy couple of years, I would say. Definitely. It's grown a lot. AWE is one of my favorite events. I try to go every year. Especially having seen it like over the last 10 years grow in such a way has been really exciting, you know, see more and more companies, more brands coming to the event. Can you tell folks a little bit about what they can expect this year? Yeah, you guys outgrew kind of where you were and now you're moving to a new location. It's going to be bigger and better than ever. So what can folks expect from AWE 2024?
Yeah, exactly. Just like, you know, the industry has grown, significantly in the last few years, we've got to a point where we're bursting at the seams at the Santa Clara Convention Center. So we found our new home, as we like to say, on the beach in Long Beach, California, 2.5 times bigger, a lot more, you know, entertainment and hospitality around it. And also, you know, LA is becoming a major Yeah. hub for not just technology, but many other industries, you know, of course, entertainment, games and entertainment, but also fashion and healthcare and tourism and trade and education and research. There's over 100 universities in that area. So really a lot of excitement, a lot of new energy into this new location. And that combined with the fact that 2024 seems like a breakthrough year for the XR industry. Of course, you know, with the Apple Vision Pro shipping to probably a higher number than many people expected yeah. already, and Meta Quest 3 achieving, you know, record-breaking sales, and a lot of the major tech titans are all announcing upcoming products, you know, from Samsung, LG, Sony, NVIDIA, Qualcomm, Microsoft. And a lot of startups also announcing new products. So it feels like it's all signaling a potential breakthrough year for spatial computing. And AWE has always been kind of a reflection of the state of the industry. So we expect this year to be really a fantastic year for the event as well, in its new location and with all the sectors that are surrounding the convention center this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about the move to Long Beach. I'm actually making it a family vacation. Nice. So I'm bringing my two older kids with me who have friends in Long Beach, and I'll be at the conference. And then after that, I'll take them to Anaheim to Disneyland. So I'm like, I'm making it a whole thing. I'm really excited, and I'll be speaking there as well. So very thrilled to be doing that.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I have a question. So last year, your keynote at AWE usually opens up the show. It's the first thing. It's like, yeah, it's always packed, and it's like that moment that sets the tone for the show, right? I remember last year, obviously AI still is kind of the main thing that a lot of people want to talk about, right? And you said something very profound. You said something along the lines of XR is the interface for AI. And that stuck with me. Very, very powerful, right? What are your thoughts around how AI, everything that's happening with large language models, everything that's happened in that space, is empowering this moment of spatial computing that we're going into?
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, like you said, AI was huge last year, and this year is even bigger in many ways. You know, it's becoming more practical. People are using it more. And I think it was pretty clear that these two worlds, you know, AI and XR, will be attached at the hip, you know, very, very close to each other, intermingled. And I actually think that in the future, we won't even be able to distinguish between these two things. It will be one big thing, you know, in a tongue-in-cheek presentation in 2020, I called it SPAI, S-P-A-I, which is Spatial Artificial Intelligence. Yeah. But it's really just the idea that these things are intermingled. And we see it on one hand, XR really is becoming the interface for AI. People are using, whether it's AR or avatars or creation tools as a way to express AI in a visual way, in a way that you can interact with. But of course, AI is also accelerating XR, right? I mean, if you look at the last few years, the quality of tracking and creating content has been improved dramatically thanks to machine learning and AI. And now also kind of all the generative AI tools are making it so much easier to create 3D content and animation, something that has been one of the biggest friction points in the industry in the past. You know, a lot of cost involved around projects, and now we're overcoming it with AI. So, it's definitely going to be a big part of the event this year. You know, a lot of exhibitors will showcase it. I think it will be in a lot of talks. even, you know, our Augie Awards has, you know, a category for best use of AI. So we'll see it all over the place.
Yeah, I'm very excited. And I don't know if you can share any like little preview. I don't want you to spill the tea, but any preview on what we might expect from your opening keynote? Anything you can tease?
Yeah, let's see. So, I mean, I always like to start with sort of a magic trick, you know, something that is, Charlie Finn calls it a sleight of hand, you know, something that is really leveraging the technology, but kind of demonstrating it in a way that you rarely see on stage. So expect something like that. I can't tell you what it is exactly yet, but I can tell you a few things. I mean, first of all, you know, the themes around the event and the opening will be around, one, the fact that it's a breakthrough year. So what does it mean, you know, and how can each one of us can make a mark on the industry in that early stage? Another important thing is, you know, it's our 15th anniversary for AWE and pretty much, you know, for the XR industry. If you think about it, it's about 15 years since it restarted after the early 90s flops. So so that 15th year is for us as a chance for celebration.
Yeah,
we are going to invite a lot of pioneers, seriously pioneers, you know, from the very early days of this industry, you know, from 50 years ago, to tell their stories so we can all learn from that so as we shape the future of XR and of the world. So that would be a big theme. A lot of sessions in the tracks will be about the history of each different aspect of XR. And this is the first time that I'm introducing it. We'll also have an XR museum, which we've had it in the 10th anniversary. So we're bringing it back. It's basically a collection of vintage XR headsets and devices. So that'll be a lot of fun. And expect another pretty major announcement later in April about what else we're doing in this idea of embracing XR's past to shape the future.
I love that.
Finally,
the
last thing that is really, you may have already seen this in our social posts and images. It's kind of our slogan this year, which is, you'll feel spatial, we promise. And that kind of embodies this idea that, you know, when you go to the show, you will be able to try the latest spatial technologies, you know, from over 300 exhibitors, learn all about the spatial computing leaders, you know, 500 of them. And although we expect, you know, about 6,000 of your peers to be there, we're kind of crafting the experience so that you'll still feel special. Right. So it's kind of a double entendre, you know, special, spatial.
Yes.
So that's kind of a bit of the theme for this year. And lastly, I want to say, you know, you mentioned that, you know, a lot of brands and enterprises are listening to this podcast. And obviously, we're seeing tremendous adoption, but also a lot of lack of knowledge, you know, a lot of businesses that are not sure how to get started or maybe how to advance it beyond the pilot stage. So we have a special new program at AWE called the AWE Focus, which is an exclusive new program for executives in you know, major industry sectors like aerospace and defense and fashion and healthcare and tourism. So some of the key sectors that we see around the LA area and beyond. And that's expected to be really a way for these executives to make the most out of the time that they have at the event, you know, maximize networking, make sure, you know, special dedicated tours in the expo hall for whatever your focus is. That's why we call it AWE Focus.
Yeah. And are you going to have the AR Playground again this year?
The AWE Playground is definitely coming back as part of the
Expo Hall. That's like my favorite part of the Expo Hall. I mean, I love all of it, but the AR Playground is really where you get hands-on with just the most creative things. But you're bringing it back.
That's kind of this little extra that we try to add to every event. You know, it's not something that, you know, we basically offer it for free to very interesting experiences, hands-on experiences in practically any aspect of life. And we've had some really crazy things going on there. People are always clamoring about all these experiences at the AWE Playground.
Yeah, very creative. I love how the level of creativity in the AR Playground always blows my mind. So I absolutely love that. I love that this year you're going to kind of focus on the heritage and the history of XR as an industry. I also love that you're focusing on the future. I actually recently wrote a piece in Forbes called The Hidden Figures of Spatial Computing about five women that I personally admire, like Noni de la Peña, Dr. Carolina Cruzneda, Jackie Mori, who's been at AWE many times, Mary Spio, Evelyn Miralles, you know, to kind of also celebrate some of the women that I think are the hidden figures. They're not hidden, you know, they're not hidden or unsung, but I just don't want to wait 70 years for the movie to come out.
Yes.
they are. So I just wanted to make a point because, you know, March was International Women's Month. So I love that you're leaning into the heritage and the history, but also the future, right? Because it's always been, in my perspective, a place where I go to talk to my industry colleagues about where do we go next? You know, and this moment that we arrive in is super exciting. So from your perspective, being, you know, part of tech for a long time, part of the industry, being an investor, being, you know, part of AWE, why do you think in some ways AI is accelerating XR? Why do you think it's such an important part of spatial computing as we move forward?
Well, first, it's, you know, a technical matter that, you know, especially in AR, when you try to overlay computer graphics on the real world, there have been, you know, some computer vision techniques from 20, 30 years ago that have been developing, and they reached a certain point where, you know, it's pretty good, but it's still struggling with things. You know, a simple example is trying a watch on your wrist, right? So a lot of applications try to achieve that so you can promote, you know, jewelry or other kind of fashion items with AR. And that was a really, it sounds simple, but it's really tough. So in the past, you know, you used markers on your wrists or things like that. And that was, you know, too much friction for this to really work. And then, you know, I think it was in 2017 when kind of new machine learning techniques arrived on the scene. All of a sudden, you know, you can train the computer vision application on, you know, a million wrists, and then it could know to recognize it and place the content on it in a much better way. And since then, you know, we've seen things like, you know, beauty apps.
Yeah.
You know, you want to try different colors on your hair, and all of a sudden, the quality jumped, you know, 1,000-fold. You know, even I used an app to color my hair, which is a very little, and it looks just amazing with these new kind of machine learning algorithms that are accelerating the capabilities of XR. So that's, you know, just a very simple technical example, and I kind of alluded to before the generative AI is already kind of making big moves in XR. So, you know, we've seen some early examples probably 3, 4, 5 years ago where some startups were trying to leapfrog some of the limitations in the ability to create 3D content. It's, mm-hmm. like I said, you know, it's very laborious. It takes a lot of money. So it started with kind of prompts. You know, you say, show me a building, or show me, you know, a little animal, and it would pop up. But all of that had to be programmed in the past.
Yeah.
And now with generative AI, all of a sudden, you can create all of that almost out of thin air and in pretty high quality. So we're seeing this in AR. You know, let's say you want to have an experience in your room in mixed reality. So you still have your room, but overlay some content on it in a way that fits your real room. That was a very tough problem in the past. And now with generative AI, you know, you can understand the size of the room. You know, obviously you need things like, you know, cameras and maybe a LiDAR to map the room in a accurate way. But once you have that, you can overlay things in a way that adapts to your actual room. And in VR, we're already seeing some tools that are saying, you know, with just a one sentence prompt, it creates entire games, you know, 3D environments.
Entire worlds. It's crazy.
That's incredible. Yeah. And again, just a few examples of how AI is literally accelerating XR this time.
Yeah, so it's a really exciting year for anyone to join us at AWE. You know, I'll be there speaking. I'm really excited about all the fun stuff that is going to happen on the ground. Ori, where can people find more information about AWE and also you? How can they connect with you?
Simple ways to just go to our website at awexr.com or send me a direct email. You know, I'm on LinkedIn, but also email ori@awexr.com. It's great place to reach me. I'll try to respond to anyone. And
fantastic.
Would love to see everybody at the event or, you know, in one of our online events in the community.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Kathy. It was fantastic.
All right. So yeah, like Ori mentioned, you know, big changes for AWE. They've grown so much. They're moving to Long Beach. I mean, what a year. What a year to be at AWE. I don't know. I am so excited to be there, Lee.
I'm just excited that, I mean, and I've heard back and forth of people's opinion. I'd love to know what you think. I'm actually really psyched that they're going to Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they're getting a little bit closer to LA. I like the idea of being in an entertainment city over Silicon Valley. It always felt a little too tech and not where mm-hmm. tech meets lifestyle. And yeah. AWE to me very much is the type of conference that is about where this technology mm-hmm. can impact lifestyle. And I just honestly think it will be a better event in an area like Long Beach. I know that they've just kind of like outgrown
it got to be ridiculous. We're just like, yeah, you got to move the conference somewhere else because it just doesn't fit in the Santa Clara Conference Center anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I will kind of miss it though. I will.
I will miss it. I think we, because we have been done there so many years that like there's a level of comfort. You already knew where to go for what, or like where to eat, or like you already had like a plan, right? But this will be an adventure. And I think we're going to see a lot more like brands and more organizations that were typically part of AWE present. You know, we've been going, you and I have been going for years. It really is our summer camp.
It is. And as someone who like used to live in Los Angeles, it gives me a real good reason to go back and see like old friends and do a little bit more. Yeah. So I'm psyched for it.
So yeah, thanks to Ori for that interview. Okay, so our last piece of news that we want to discuss, well, two things. I want to mention, I want to say congratulations, I guess happy birthday to Reality Labs, our friends at Reality Labs. They're celebrating 10 years of building towards the next computing platform. Congratulations to people at Meta and Reality Labs who have been doing
10 years.
Crazy, right? A decade
that's
already.
Just makes you feel old.
It doesn't make me feel old. It might make you feel old, but I'm just gonna celebrate 10 years. Good job. You know, I mean, they've done really, you know, they have done so much. I mean,
they've done so much heavy lifting for where this industry has gone. And I mean, it often gets overshadowed. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that a lot of people don't want to, I mean, because everyone has their opinions on Facebook, and some of them positive, some of them negative, whatever. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to where the spatial computing, VR, AR, oh my gosh, they've really shouldered the biggest part of the weight for where the industry has gotten. We can give all the credit in the world to how much we love the Apple Vision Pro, but it honestly, the Apple Vision Pro would not exist if it weren't for Meta Reality Labs. They just wouldn't. No one wants me to say that. I'm sure Apple would cringe at that statement, but it's the truth.
But yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, you and I both know plenty of people that worked at Reality Labs or might still be there, might not.
Totally.
But yeah, I mean, I want to celebrate that just because from an XR perspective, it's a big milestone that we should celebrate for sure. Okay, so now our last piece of news that we want to talk about is, you know, we've talked a lot about like every company is now a gaming company, right?
Yeah. I told you so.
I know.
I
think the first time we brought it up on the podcast was when I said the Boston Globe is looking for like a gaming person.
Yeah.
And then we got into this whole discussion and obviously gaming is a recurring theme for this podcast. So this is, thanks to hits like Wordle, the New York Times is now a gaming company. The data is showing how the New York Times subscribers are playing games and not reading news as much.
Yeah.
And Matthew Ball had a really interesting tweet about it, said, you know, New York Times is now a gaming company, and that kind of took off and everything. What's the I told you so here, Lee? Come on, hit me with it.
I said this as soon as I saw the numbers for Wordle, like when it launched, I was all over social media. I was like, they're a gaming company. They may be the most important gaming company. This newspaper has found a path and happens to be a gaming company that has a newspaper. Like, it is no longer about the New York Times news. People play the game, and while they're there, they may actually see a news article, right? Like, it is just switched. And I've got my brother-in-law works at the New York Times, and he and I were having a long conversation at the launch of Wordle around Wordle and the impact it's had on the studio. He works in the tech side over there. And he was just like, yeah, it's 100%. This is a tech company.
It's the future. It's the media content type. I think the person that runs New York Times Gaming is a very, very good choice.
Yeah.
I am thrilled to see. I mean, I think it bodes well for all of us that work in this space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Well, the old media is starting to understand the power of gaming and the impact, and the fact that someone says New York Times is now a gaming company. I mean, all this media should be paying attention, and in my perspective, should be hiring people with those skills.
But this it would have to come from the New York Times, right? Because the New York Times, I think the tweak that needs to be had is it's been a gaming company. It's now a like video game company.
Yeah.
Because what is the New York Times without the New York Times crossword? And now we're going back way back, right? Like, so they've seen this, right? Like, this has been the motive for decades. The New York Times without the New York Times crossword is not the New York Times. And so this is just the bringing that ethos into the modern digitized era. And it works so well. And it wouldn't work as well if it were just the crossword puzzle digitized, right? Like, the Wordle game is freaking brilliant. And what's the new one that they've got where my wife plays it all the time, where you've got like a bunch of words, you have to figure out
like words with friends or something.
No. You have to figure out how they relate.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't have as snappy as a name as Wordle, right? Like but
I know which one you're talking about, but I'm like, I can't remember the name. Whatever that is.
Our listeners
they have
are like,
more, they have more things coming. Like they're looking at different formats, different things to do with gaming. Gaming in many different fronts, right? Because I think people don't realize gaming is very broad and doesn't only mean you're Call of Duty, first person shooter.
Right. Totally.
So I want to be clear about that. I will share something really interesting. So I'm on my flight yesterday coming back from Miami to DC, and I'm seeing the ads on the plane, and I get this ad and I'm going to read it. It says, "Solve today's crossword and other word and logic games with New York Times games." That was one of the only ads for New York Times was a New York Times games ad.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the plane.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to take a picture because I was like, if there is a signal telling you that the New York Times is a gaming company, it is that their advertising budgets are going towards promoting New York Times gaming.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. They're one of the few that has figured out like how the press can continue on. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily have to be like the main focus of what gets your initial attention. I'm a big fan of the New York Times. I think that they've made some really smart decisions. If it were in the fad or future question, I think it's the future. And I think we're going to see a bunch 100% of people follow suit.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. I think, the fact that Boston Globe was looking for someone already and like, we're going to continue to see that for sure.
Totally.
Maybe someone will come knocking on our doors. come be the head of gaming for blah, blah, blah. Hey, I'll go for that. Anyway, so before we call it a day, we do want to do this patch from the fringe. Our producer Lily has a really interesting story about spiders and machine learning. All right, Lily, take it away.
Hello, Kathy and Lee. Welcome to this week's Dispatch from the Fringe, where I have a story for you about spider conversations being decoded with the help of machine learning and contact microphones. That's right, spiders have entered the Spider-Verse, or at least scientists who study spiders have now used AI to understand what they're saying, from courtship rituals to territorial disputes. The problem is that the technology they use isn't as clear as they want, and it doesn't get as much data. So Nori Choi, who at the time was a PhD student at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, developed a way to combine an array of tiny, cheap contact microphones alongside a sound processing machine learning program. Choi placed these 25 microphones and pitfall traps across a 1,000-square-foot section of forest floor. Choi then captured thousands of hours of sound, actually 1,625 days worth of recordings. And instead of trying to listen and decipher the spider's movements with his own ears, he designed a machine learning program that was capable of filtering out unwanted sounds and isolating the vibrations from three separate wolf spider species. Now, Choi said about AI and machine learning that automate the analysis of vibratory signals, ecologists still have a responsibility to first verify and understand them in their native context. Choi's doctoral advisor said that Choi's method is 100% novel and will open up avenues of research that people have been trying to explore over the years. Nori Choi is now a postdoctoral researcher at Germany's Max Planck Institute of Animal Behavior, and it will be interesting to see how machine learning is used to understand the animal world from here on out.
All right, Lee, Why do we keep talking about spiders? Like, I think spiders keep coming up with our Dispatch from the Fringe. Like, what's up with that?
This is like techno Charlotte's Web, right? Like, the ability to utilize this technology. This is a cyberpunk Charlotte's Web is what we've come
there
to,
you
to
go.
Grips with. It's like, you're going to talk to us. I don't want to know what the spiders are thinking.
I don't want to know what they're thinking. World domination. Like, I do want to know what they're thinking? Octopi. I want to know what an octopus is thinking because they're so incredibly smart. I know there's been a lot of research, but I'm like, I would want to tap into their brain and like really understand them.
Yeah, so I don't know. Their dolphins are up there with it. I would love to know what dolphins are thinking, but spiders are not on my list. Yeah. I'm sure plenty of them are angry as I grab for the dust buster and remove them from the corners of my house.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, spiders on Tech Magic.
Thanks, Lily.
Lee, fantastic episode. Looking forward to next week. Thank you for joining me for this episode. I don't even know what number episode we're in. I stopped counting.
Yeah, we're done. I don't know what numbers I've lost.
You're with us. You've been with us for a while. So there you go. All right. Well, everyone, thank you for joining Tech Magic. Come for the tech, stay for the magic. We'll be back next week. Please review and subscribe and share this with your friends. Please send us some feedback and we will be back next week.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.